The work, the data that I'm going to present is work from my lab and from Eric Pilevsky. And together we are working with an ag engineer, Shmuel Gunmor. Israel is largely arid or semi-arid country. And you see from these isobars of rainfall that it is really very arid. Half the country in landmass is desert. This area near Beersheba, between the 100 and 200 millimeters isobar, has about 80,000 hectares of agricultural land, both in greenhouse and open field. And this is where my research station is and where my research takes place. Even though water is a problem, or because water is a problem, we have excellent conservation. We have about 75% reuse of water. One of the consequences of that is as water is reused, it becomes slightly more saline. We have desalinization plants built and more being built, and of course we developed the drip irrigation system a few decades ago, which is now used worldwide. But nevertheless, water is a severe problem. And just to illustrate that point, this past summer, no sweet corn was grown in my area because it cost too much in water, and the grower simply wouldn't profit. As water is a restricted commodity, it becomes very expensive. So with the background of this research, we know from laboratory experiments that pollen is good for acarine biological control agents. In fact, there are many that you can rear just on pollen. But unlike all the predators and parasitoids we've heard about until now, they're mites. They don't have wings. They have to walk from the resource plant to the crop plant. And in fact, there are some mites that will move in orchards from resource plants, but they're small and it takes them a long time. And we wanted to put pollen on the plant so they wouldn't have to make this trip or migration from the resource plant to the crop plant. And finally, greenhouses, although we did see with Carolyn that there are plants that can be put in and removed, generally greenhouses are intensive agriculture and growers don't want a whole row or disruption of their rows with resource plants. So our goals were to develop a means of applying pollen directly to the plant that could be used in different agricultural situations that would benefit the acarine predators. As I said, we were working with an ag engineer, Shmuel Gunmor. He developed a means of pollinating date trees that was much more efficient than the current means. Currently, you just collect all the pollen and it's windblown onto to the flowers. He developed a method by putting an electrostatic charge on the pollen that it actually adhered to the female flowers. So he's able to use less pollen and get better pollination. Well, we took this idea and said, if it works there, why not put pollen directly onto the plants with the same system? So here you see the backpack battery source that puts the charge in the system. This is the working end. This syringe would be filled with pollen. There's a motor that drives the plunger down at a uniform rate, so we produce X amount of pollen per second in a uniform manner. And this is the end where an electrostatic negative charge is put on the pollen. And with this whole system, as you walk, there's a chain that you drag on the ground behind you that grounds it. So the plants have a positive charge, the pollen has a negative charge, and you get adherence. To improve the adherence, we also mist the plants with water. And one of the things that our engineer, Shmuel, is working on is to put this all into one unit. Right now it takes two applicators to apply, but eventually this will all be in one unit that one applicator can use. This is what a leaf looks like after the pollen's been applied. You see that the pollen is in clusters. This is the droplets of water, but these clusters are spread uniformly throughout the blade of the leaf. So a predator needs only walk a couple of millimeters to encounter a cluster of pollen. The cropping systems that we've tested so far are greenhouse sweet peppers, avocado, and date trees. Now, I'd just like to give you a little bit of background because people don't know so much about acarine predators. In 1997, McMurtry and Croft divided them into four different types based on their host and their pollen. I've constructed this graph looking just at pollen consumption. So a type 1 predator is represented by a Phytosaelis species, Persimilis being the most commonly used. They are a specialist of spider mites. They don't feed on pollen. They can only be reared on spider mites. If pollen's in the system, they ignore it. They simply don't need it. Type 2 and type 3 predators will consume pollen. In fact, but the species we used, you can rear them in the lab entirely on pollen. As was mentioned before, and these predators prefer to have some meat in their diet. And so you can also rear them just on the different hosts. But pollen seems to have a positive benefit. And then the fourth type, type 4, must have pollen. These are represented by Eusaeus, many, I think 20 or 25 different species. But if pollen is not present in the system, they will leave the plant. Even if you have an abundance or an overabundance of host species, if there is no pollen, they will not remain. So let's start with the greenhouse peppers. We use Amblyocellus swirskii, named after Professor Swirsky, who has since met his maker. It was first described in Israel in the 1950s and 60s, and in the last recent few years, it has been developed by all the major biological supply companies as a predator, primarily of whiteflies and thrips. In my lab, we've shown that it's also a very effective predator of the broad mite, Polyphagocytosis latus. And it will feed some on Tetranychus, which is also a pest of sweet pepper, and of course, Franklinella occidentalis, which is the western flower thrips that we've heard much of today. The first question we wanted to ask, we know that swirskii will develop in a petri dish just on corn, but how will it react on a plant? So we took a tray of 210 seedling peppers, sprayed, as you see, the left-hand side, 70, with 2 grams of pollen. The middle section had no pollen, and the right-hand section had 1 gram of pollen. We then spread swirskii in bulk. When it's in bulk, it's in a bran carrier that has a storage mite as a food source. We spread this on the seedlings, allowed them to establish, move around, get out of the bran for 3 hours, and then we potted the plants. Each of the drippers was coated with Vaseline, petroleum jelly, so that the mites wouldn't be able to leave and move from one plant to another. And then we destructively sampled 10 plants every week and counted all the mites. These are the results. I don't want to go through all of them. I just want to point out that at 26 days post application, we had large numbers, significantly more than the control, but large numbers of eggs and large numbers of adults. The nymphs, there weren't particularly large numbers. But this means that the one application of pollen would last almost a month in the environment. So with this, we went to do field testing this past summer, which we just finished in September. There were 4 treatments. The first treatment is IPM control. Now this is based on the release of biological control agents, being swirskii and aureus levigatus. So the chemicals that were sprayed were entirely compatible with these predators. Then we had two levels of pollen, and the low level just meant that the applicator walked quickly through the greenhouses, and the high level meant that the applicator walked slightly more slowly. This, although I will show you results from this, we need to focus more specifically using potted plants to come up with a more optimal amount of pollen. We just tried this in the field to see what would happen, but it's it wasn't quantifiable in a uniform way. And then finally, the fourth treatment was pollen being applied three times, after 7 days and after 10 days at the low level. And here I am applying it. This is the third pollen application. You can see the plants are about waist height at this point. I sampled leaves from the upper middle third of the plant, the upper third, the junction between the upper and middle, the top leaves and flowers. And here I show the results of the sampling of the mid third of the plants. Two-spotted spider mites are represented by blue, Swirsky eye is represented by red bars, and western flower thrips by the green. You see that we had significant increase in population size from no pollen to pollen applied three times, and this was very good. We had a decrease in the number of two-spotted spider mites, although it wasn't a significant, but it shows a clear trend. The highest populations being found in the no pollen application and the lowest in the high pollen application. Now, what you see in the no pollen application, we had some level of western flower thrips, and in the high population, we had very few. One of our concerns with the system is flower thrips feed on pollen. What is the application of pollen in the plant going to do, A, to their numbers, and B, to their distribution? This is something that we are looking at now, and I have no data for you. We're looking at in potted plant situations. These are the results from the flowers that we collected. And again, you see a clear significant increase from no pollen to pollen applied three times. But wait a minute. The pollen was applied on the plant leaves. The flowers in pepper often hang down. So if they got any pollen at all, it was just a little bit on the backside. So this suggests that the mites are moving out of the flowers and feeding on the pollen on the leaves and then maybe moving back in, that you get such a significant increase in their populations. The western flower thrips, again, we see a decrease, but it wasn't significant. The numbers weren't high enough to see a statistically significant decrease. And what we also measured was the amount of aureus. And lo and behold, we have an increase in the aureus as we increase the pollen, suggesting again that perhaps they're moving out of the flower and feeding on the pollen on the leaves and increasing their number that way. Now, we know that aureus is an interguild predator. It will feed on other mites, such as Neocellus cucumeris or barkeri, that are found in the leaves. We assume that it was also feeding on the Swirsky eye. We have no reason to believe that it wasn't, let's put it that way. So one of the other things that we have to look at in this system is how is the interguild predation affected by the presence of pollen in all leaves. Will it move the mites out of the flowers more so that they aren't subject to the aureus as much as they would be if there was no pollen present? I have no answer. This is something we're looking at. The next system I'd like to talk about is the avocado trees. Bemisia tabaci has always been a pest of avocado in Israel, but I'm not going to talk about that today. The Persea mite, Oligonychus persei, arrived in Israel in 2001 and has since spread to all avocado growing areas in the country. The primary predator, the virtually exclusive predator of it, is this Euceius scutellus. And it, if you remember, I said, is a type 4 predator that needs pollen in order to be effective. Well, if you do a survey of avocado orchards, you will see the population of Euceius here in pink and the population of the Perseamite here in blue. The Usaea species peaks in summer when you have high pollen being blown onto the trees from other plants in the area. As this pollen either becomes unavailable or no longer useful, the Usaeus drops and you get a concomitant increase in the Perseamite. So with that in mind, we thought, well, what happens if we apply pollen to the trees? Can we conserve the Usaeus species that's around? I should mention that Usaeus is not, you cannot purchase it because it's not been developed you can grow it in small numbers in the laboratory, but on commercial production has not yet been developed. So in this case, we're talking about conservation of a predator that naturally occurs. So the first question was, well, how will it do on corn pollen? So plants were treated with a small amount of pollen. Usaeus was added. Pollen was added every 3 days to make sure that the Usaeus established. After that, after 10 days, the plants were divided into two groups arbitrarily. One group was to continue receiving pollen application, and the other group, pollen was removed from the leaves very carefully so that no Scutellus were removed at the same time. And then 30 Perseamites were added. The experiment was allowed to continue for 6 weeks, adding in treatment one the pollen, and in treatment two, no pollen. At the end of 6 weeks, all plants were destructively sampled and all mites counted. Here we see the results for the Perseamite, the pest, where there was the control, no added pollen, we had robust populations of the pest. However, where pollen was added, we had very few. So when we look at the predator population, Scutellus here, we see that in the control there were no mites, no pollen, no mites. They moved off the plants, died, whatever happened to them, by the end of 6 weeks, I'm sure it was even sooner, they were gone. But in the pollen-treated plants, we see, again, a very robust population of the predators and the concomitant reduction of the pest. So with this laboratory work or potted plant work behind us, next was to go into the field. So here we see mature avocado trees. Now the entire tree was not treated because these trees are meters high. We just treated the area from the basal leaves up to about 1.5 to 2 meters high. So here one of the applicators is misting the trees with water. And here we see the pollen. If you look carefully, you see sort of a mist of pollen here. The entire circumference of the tree was treated to 1.5 to 2 meters. And if we look at the populations, we see that in the top graph is the pest, the Perseamite, that in the trees where no pollen was applied, we had significantly larger populations of the pest as compared to the trees in which pollen was applied. Looking at the predator, we see again where pollen was applied, we have significantly higher populations of the predator. So pollen application in this can be an effective means of conserving the natural Usaeus scutellus that appears and effectively controlling the Perseamite. Okay, now moving on to date trees. We have an Oligonychus species that's the old world date mite. Here in the States, you have the Banks grass mite, which is the equivalent, the ecological equivalent, and causing the same damage. The mite affects the bunches of the dates when they're growing from the early stages for about 6 weeks to 2 months. It lives continuously in the grasses at the base of the trees, especially Bermuda grass, but it also lives in other grasses. So here you see this picture of the strand. These dates are about the size of peas at this time, and a magnification shows you the strands of silk and the mites that are on them. And this is the results on the right. Infested dates are shrunken, smaller in size, dehydrated, as compared to the non-infested. These are not marketable dates. So it causes significant economic damage. A survey was done of the native predator species, and 5 species were found. For the trials, for the next set of trials that I'm going to show you, we only used these 3 species. They were found in large enough numbers, in larger numbers than the other 2, and they could all be reared in the laboratory for the releases. So the first experiment was with this young Manjol date. 10 trees were treated with pollen, and you see this is what the pollen looks like on the dates, and 10 trees were left untreated. For each tree, one bunch was treated with 30 female predators of one species. At the base of the bunch, we had a cup with sticky remifoot, which is this tanglefoot, same as tanglefoot, to keep the predators from moving off. The mites were released in an Eppendorf tube in the middle of the bunch and allowed to move out at will. The predators were released about a week and a half to 2 weeks before the native infestation of the pest mite occurred. And these are the results. Where pollen was added, we had significantly larger populations of the predator mite. The Tephlodromus athiaceae had the largest populations, and so we decided to focus on this mite for future studies. The Tephlodromus will eat all stages of the spider mite, eggs, immatures, and adult, as you see in this picture. So for this, mature barhi trees were used. And these trees, 10 bunches were used. And if the tree had more than that, the bunches were removed. So we were only working with 10 bunches. I should tell you that each strand has about 100, each bunch has about 100 strands on it. There were 3 treatments total, but each tree received only 1 treatment. So the 3 treatments were a non-manipulated control. Whatever mites appeared. 6 trees in which T. athiaceae was released, and 6 trees in which pollen and T. athiaceae was released. So the first release was given about, again, a week and a half to 2 weeks before the native pest occurred. 200 were given per branch, or 2,000 per tree. And then once the spider mite was found on the bunches, a second release of 200 mites was given. Mites were counted weekly by destructively sampling 3 strands from each bunch. And at the end, these are the results of the population of the spider mite. In the control, there were very high spider mites. Where T. athiaceae was released, there were fewer, but only significantly fewer mites where we had both the pollen and the T. athiaceae released. So again, by spraying the pollen, we were able to establish good predator populations and effectively, significantly reduce the pest population. Grade A fruit is all exported from Israel. Grade B fruit is used for local markets, and grade C fruit is simply thrown away. It's very costly because the pickers have to pick all of the dates, and so the grower has the cost of picking, and then he just has to throw these dates away and remove them. So it's important to move as much grade C fruit into group A or B. And as you see here, there were significantly fewer grade C fruit than there were in either the control or the T. athiaceae. Now I'd like to move back in more in line with the talks that we've had until now. And this is the use of Rhodes grass in avocado orchards. And just to remind you, we're working with Eusaeus scutellus, the predatory mite, and Oligonychus persei, the pest mite. This work was done up in northern Israel, just below Haifa, where you have higher rainfall. This gets about 600 millimeters of rain per year. Rhodes grass, this is a picture of the trial. These are Haas avocados on either side of the Rhodes grass. Rhodes grass is very good because it's drought tolerant and it's also salt tolerant. It takes about 60 days from planting the seed until flower production, and here in the lower picture you see the flowers produced, and then pollen is released. So the experimental design here was to plant 40 rows by 2 meters wide of Rhodes grass in June. It was irrigated by drip irrigation until the plants established, which was sometime in July. At that point, the irrigation system was removed and the plants were left to fend for themselves as it is. We get no rain in the summer. The rains first occur in November. So that's why I said it was important that it's a drought-resistant plant. So the grass started flowering in mid-August, and at this point, monitoring of the pest and predator populations commenced. There was no manipulation of the trees. This was simply the effect of windblown pollen on the mites and their populations. So here you see a schematic. The wind was coming from the west. One row of five-year-old Haas trees was sandwiched between two rows of Rhodes grass, and this was considered the pollen row. Five rows away was the trees were treated, that was considered the no pollen, and these trees were sampled for their mite populations. And these are the results. We found an average of 179 mites per tree in the trees that were sandwiched between the Rhodes grass, and in the trees that were five rows away from the grass and the pollen source, we had only 20. This, as you can see, is a highly significant result. I wish I could show you the results of the pest mite, but we didn't find any. Last winter, in this area, we had about 7 days where we had sub-zero temperatures, and that's unheard of. It was something like 100 years since we had such a cold winter, and we think that this selectively killed off the Persea mite. But the Eucellus managed to survive. So all I can tell you is that this natural wind-blown pollen significantly improved the predator mite population. We'll probably have to wait a year or two until the Persea mite can develop enough to retest. But we will continue. The Rhodes grass is there and it will not be removed. So the overall conclusions from this is, in laboratory tests, we can effectively increase the predator populations, and where we're looking at the pest populations, we get a substantial reduction. In field trials, we either got a significant increase in the predatory mite, and then our results either were significant or they showed a trend in a good direction. This system is very new. The data I'm showing you was just from a month ago. We finished in September. We have a lot of work to do with this system, developing the optimum level of pollen, determining how often we need to spray the pollen on the plants, in addition to the other problems of integral predation and the effect on the pest species. More study is needed, and we're working on it. But we think we've come up with an effective way of spraying both. We haven't yet looked at open field crops, but at least greenhouse and orchard crops to conserve or improve the augment, depending upon what species we're looking at, the predatory species. These are the graduate students from both Eric's and my lab that were involved, and the technicians, and it was supported from a Ministry of Agriculture grant. Thank you. Yes?
As the economics come into what pollen you choose and you collect, and perhaps how perishable it is, and also in comparison with potentially what's used as pollen source.
Okay. We're using corn pollen. Corn produces vast quantities of pollen. Our Shmuel is working on a means of mechanically harvesting. We harvested about, well, I didn't because there was no corn grown in my area, but Eric and his grad students harvested about 2 kilos of pollen. And it was simply by, I think they cut the tassels, where you can shake the tassels off. Once it's dried, it's very stable. I keep it in, I keep it in a minus 80 freezer, but stored at minus 80, it'll last years. So when we can get it mechanically harvested, and our engineer seems to feel that that's a minor problem, we will have vast amounts. We've also experimented with tifa, which is cattail pollen. That's also produces large quantities, but as you know, you have to slog through water and you have to catch it at the right time. That's the reason why we did our lab test first with the corn pollen, was to see how well it would work before we went to the field. Does that answer your question?
Yes, but what about, for instance, yeast-based
pollen? We haven't looked at yeast-based. Now, I mentioned earlier, we did try pollen from beekeepers, but when bees collect pollen, their saliva is used to hold the pollen, and it somehow adversely affects the pollen, because we did try soaking the pollen to release it, and it didn't work. In laboratory tests where we offered the mites pollen, they simply wouldn't take it. So that is not an effective means of using pollen. Felix. No, we haven't. There was another woman who worked with Neocellus californicus, and she examined 40 different types of pollen. And I'm sure there are pollens that have better nutritional value. I don't doubt that. But you have to have something that can be gathered in large numbers, and you aren't restricted. So when you look at oak pollen or flower pollen, you have a relatively short time period. But corn, at least in the beginning, before the growers spray it for insect pests, produces huge amounts for over a period of some weeks until the growers have to start spraying. And it's good enough, if I can put it that way. My studies in the greenhouse pepper showed that they would do well for 26 days, okay, from one pollen application. Yes, we may be able to improve that. But right now, this is what we're working with.
Just wanted to comment on that. I know you guys have more acid for kill stuff at IODC, but the coconut produced that artificial dye, I think that they brand next thing that they really did it down to for skin. And they had incredible results. I mean, they were really small scale runs of plants like that, but you seem to have come from artificial dye that they applied to the plant that really bump up the efficacy of super skin. But I don't know, like, everybody else's.
Carol?
How long does the rose grass pollen last?
Ah, good question. I don't know how long the rose grass pollen lasts. It lasted long enough. It lasted for some weeks, but I don't know. I don't know. Rami?
I'm just curious if you figured out how much pollen you might per hectare if you have any sense.
The question is how much pollen was applied. On the avocado trees, they were applying 2 grams per tree. This is something that we haven't worked out yet. How much is a minimal amount that will benefit the predators without being excess? So these are things we have to work out. This is really just, we're just working on this. Right, than there were at the 1 gram. No, that's the data we got. I have no answer why 2 grams had less. I simply don't know. But this is the data that we got.
Just to comment for this about that rose grass element.
Okay. Okay. Good idea.
With aureus, anyway, the pollen has little to do with reproduction. It's especially effective, it seems, in the very early stages. The neonates consume pollen and there's a great deal of it with the neonates in here. But the prey is very necessary for development, reproductive development in adults. Is that an analogous situation?
No, because these mites can be reared entirely on pollen without the Swirsky entirely on pollen. As a matter of fact, I maintain my cultures just on pollen. I provide no prey in my lab cultures. But the curious thing for me was why the aureus, there was a correlation between increased pollen and increased aureus populations in the greenhouse studies. I have no explanation for that. By the third treatment, there were blossoms. We started early when the plants were young, and by the third bloom, which you saw there when it was about waist high on me, yes, we did have flowers.
Aureus in peppers is associated with the flowers, not with the...
Absolutely.
So the pollen would have been standing in for that.
Okay. These are also wild aureus that are coming in on their own. Not released. Okay, thank you very much.